Welcome to the One Seat Buffer podcast, where we are going to talk about the Meg and the person that really brought me, myself, Tony Tone, to see the Meg is Joel Krawczyk, who really, you have been hyped on this movie since
we saw the trailer in, I think, was it Jurassic World? No, I don't remember which movie it was that we saw the trailer. It might have been Deadpool 2.
Wow. It's okay. Jason Statham is an unstoppable force. Travis Gadel is also here. He's the general manager of the Palms 10 movie theater. The Meg is surprisingly fun. If you like,
I laughed out loud.
If you like Sharknado,
you'll love the Meg.
And Shark Week, you will love the Meg. And I'll say this, I'm not going to say that the Meg is near as good as Jaws. I'm never going to say
no.
That. But if you like shark movies, you should see the Meg, and I can't believe I'm saying that.
It might be the second best shark movie. If you make the Jaws franchise one whole franchise, cuz even Jaws 3 or
just
Jaws
going right
in the
past,
Sea World game.
Just going right past Deep Blue Sea.
Huh? I'm saying it's going above Deep Blue Sea.
Wow.
I mean, here's why. Mm-hmm. Because this is a shark movie where obviously human folly is how we kind of get to this
right
shark. But at the same time, like, it's not malicious. It's not like Deep Blue Sea where they're ignoring a lot, that she's just greedy. She wants to cure Alzheimer's. And that's why those sharks were genetically altered. I mean, this is nature finding a way.
Oh, Travis, what did you think? I mean, they take a little while to show you the Megalodon or the Meg. The first moment you saw the Meg, what were you thinking?
Oh, I was just kind of laughing about the whole situation. I thought the movie was more comical than anything. It's good, great August movie, but I mean, it honestly, like, for me personally, I felt like it was just a carbon copy of the Jurassic Park series, just underwater. So that's just where I was at on the whole movie.
Part underwater.
Oh my gosh! You know what though? This boy, I don't even know where to start with this thing to unpack what we just watched.
I'll say this: the opening sequence is good. It's a very
yes.
I'll say for as I'm going to use the word bad, but maybe cheesy is the right word. Mm-hmm. As bad as the dialogue and the conversation writing is in this movie,
rough.
The way they made this movie, the cinematography, the CGI, the, you know, water is a challenging thing to make it look good. Mm-hmm. while you're shooting in it. They did a nice job of making this movie. You don't feel over the top, as little over the top as you can be with a 75-foot shark chasing you. But it looks good. The movie looks good. The dialogue's bad.
And speaking of cinematography, watch it in 3D. If you haven't watched it yet, watch it in 3D.
It's good in 3D.
This was the best movie I've seen in 3D in a long time. Like, hands down. Yeah. I mean, the 3D was amazing.
They use it well, especially at the end with some of the bursting of bubbles, if you will.
It was so this is one of those like real D 3D movies, whatever. And there's always that moment when you're watching a 3D movie and the dog robot thing comes out and you're like, I always think this is the best the 3D is going to look, because they've got that real 3D down to where you're right, Travis. This is so immersive. Joel talks about cinematography. I'm going Tom Stern, who's the cinematographer for the Meg. Let me just give you some of the movies he's worked on that he's done cinematography. Ready? And I'll just rapid fire. Bloodwork, Mystic River, Million Dollar Baby, The Exorcism of Emily Rose, Flags of Our Fathers, Letters from Iwo Jima, Last Kiss, Changeling, Gran Torino.
So he's Clint Eastwood's guy.
He's Clint Eastwood's guy, but then he also is the guy that's doing the Meg. So, right, cinematography, even with a kind of kooky concept of, research lab owned by eccentric billionaire who is Rainn Wilson's character.
Yeah, which Rainn Wilson suffers from being amazing in one thing, which makes him not very believable in anything else. And he is Dwight Schrute from The Office. There's no getting past him being Dwight Schrute from The Office. I'm just waiting for him to talk about a beet farm being where he got his billions.
Right. I didn't watch any of The Office, but I just said right, like I got that reference.
You've never seen that.
I was thinking the same thing through the whole movie.
You've not watched The Office?
No, and I interviewed Rainn Wilson once on the radio.
I was going to bring that up. Yeah, it was
so.
But
I've never seen The Office. I don't know. It's one of those shows like I'm not going to get into it. I don't want to have the time for it. I feel like I would like the Ricky Gervais one. It's not that I don't like Steve Carell. Yeah.
As much as you like Parks and Recreation, I feel like The Office was up your
street.
I don't
know if I want to give that much time.
You don't have to. I'm just saying if you ever find the time, we really digress here, but find the time because it's tremendous.
Here's what I have the time for. Jason Statham has not aged since, I don't know. He took his shirt off in this movie, and he has the 6 or 8 pack.
It has been a long time since I've heard women swoon in a movie theater. Like that, he got an aural reaction.
51.
He's 51 years old.
51, and he's, you know, he looks that good. It doesn't make sense. The man, and it's like it's believable. He's so believable as his character Jonas Taylor, who is a badass diver that gets called in to help rescue people.
Underwater rescue expert.
Some type of like almost prehistoric crust, a cloud that separates Earth from the prehistoric.
The thermal crust.
When Jason Statham took off his shirt, there was a guy by me who literally like, damn, like so jealous of that at that point. It was the best moment, I think, in the movie.
Just, you know,
everybody's reaction to that.
I think the one thing that I will give this movie a lot of credit for is it understood the lane it was going in, which is action movie, not really believable action movie. And it didn't try to be more than what it was. Like it didn't. It had a little bit of a love story kind of thrown in there, but it wasn't a big one. It wasn't a huge plot point. They did a nice job of weaving into the different set pieces, which were all like floating set pieces. Right. So I mean, that's a challenge in itself. It was a well constructed movie. It's not. It's some of the worst dialogue I've witnessed in a while. Yeah, I mean, it's really bad dialogue. It's Arnold Schwarzenegger, Mr. Freeze type stuff. It's pretty rough.
They did, however, do a really good job, I think, of humanizing the characters. So
the
girl
was important.
Yeah, while it wasn't good dialogue, it was realistic enough that it kept them human. So you kind of could immerse yourself a little bit into the story. Even though, I mean, the whole premise of the story is completely unreasonable.
One of my favorite things in any movie like this, when we see it in Jurassic Park, we see it in this movie, is using the scientific explanation as a foreshadowing vehicle. So they get the shark cage that's polycarbonate, and she's rattling off all the PSI statistics. And the whole time she's doing that, you're sitting there going, all right, we know that this shark is going to try to swallow this shark cage, and we're going to...
I mean, for a 75-foot shark, this thing is like a pill. I mean, it's just a really big pill, but it'll get it, whatever.
Well, and just amazing tensile strength of winches in this movie. I mean, this is a real... This is a real win for physics. No, I'm kidding. There's a lot of...
I just think, like, you have to go to see this movie and understand that it's not going to be the best, but it's not going to be the worst.
You're right.
I'm very much in that middle. Like I would grade this with a generous, like, you know, C+. And I feel good saying that because, and as I said before we started the 1C Buffer podcast, I enjoyed this more than I enjoyed Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom. Even though the dialogue is throwaway, somehow they convinced me to have more stock in these characters that were fighting a megalodon shark, you know. And Jason Statham, to his credit, convincing. I just want to give a shout out to a couple other cast members, and I'm probably going to mispronounce names and I apologize. Lee Bingbing plays Su Yin, Rainn Wilson we mentioned, Cliff Curtis is Mac, Winston Chow is Dr. Zhang, Ruby Rose was fantastic, Paige Kennedy is DJ, Robert Taylor is Mr. Heller. So, you know, they did a fairly decent job casting. And again, just like Skyscraper, this is a movie that will do huge with the China market. It's almost feeling like, you know, like I said on the Skyscraper podcast, like that movie was made to be almost more successful overseas, Having said that, as we sit here taping the One Seat Buffer podcast, The Meg, gentlemen, was number one at the box office with $44 million.
And this is the place you should see this movie. You should see this movie on an XL screen with the Dolby Atmos surround sound system in real 3D. This isn't one that you wait for it to come onto streaming or something like that. Like, it's not going to have the same effect. But you got to come to a theater and see this movie.
Yeah, this is very much like the Avatar of, like, the day. It's a movie.
This is better than Avatar.
Oh, definitely better than Avatar. But watch it. It's a 3D movie.
I hated Avatar.
Watch it in 3D. Watch it on the big screen. It's not going to be. It's not going to be nearly as good on your home theater system. No matter what kind of theater system you have, so it's not going to be as good at home.
Here's my question to you guys: is this movie a go see it 2-3 times? Is this a movie you see 4 times in your life?
This would definitely be a movie I could see myself going to see a second time. But it's definitely probably one that, like, I'll walk past it every single time when I see it in the store. I'm probably never going to buy it on DVD, honestly.
Yeah, I agree. I think this will have a great shelf life in whatever, I was going to say cable channel, but that's, I don't want to date myself, whatever streaming, vehicle it finds it. But yeah, I think that this will have a lot of strong word of mouth from people like us that went to see it. And then we're convinced you're listening to this, so we're not trying to convince you to do anything, but certainly we're telling you that we had a good time, so that word of mouth will carry it. Here's what's interesting. I'm kind of like the numbers nerd with the box office stuff. So this movie so far has made $141 million. It cost $1.35 to make.
Hey, it made a profit.
No, they spent another $140
marketing?
And for, like, the digital prints to go worldwide.
So this thing has to do $250 million just to break even?
$400 million to break even.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, that being said, is it going to make $400 million combined with domestic United States and the foreign box office? I don't know. Maybe. It did $97 million, outside of the States. That's a lot. And, again, I think the word of mouth will have this next weekend. I don't even know what's coming out this coming week. But I bet that the Meg will at least be in second place with another, like, $25 to $30 million probably. And that would be impressive for a Jason Statham movie where he fights a shark that's how many times bigger than him? What is
a
he?
Lot.
Well, he's not
they,
even
so
that
they,
tall.
They showed a six-foot shark or six-foot human, right, in that amazing underwater, like, Darwin chart, if you will, of, like, the orca. And all the it's fascinating. And here's the thing, though. Here's what I don't mind about these movies. We were talking in our fall movie preview about Halloween and, you know, the serial killer aspect. Like, the shark is terrifying, but I'm not mad at the shark. Like, the shark's just being a shark. It's not like there's no vindictiveness with this animal. Like, it's just it's like, I'm hungry, I eat. Like, it's I see food, I eat it.
I don't know. The shark did seem like it was kind of targeting things, though. I mean, like, it was like it
they
seemed
have
like
all those bright lights.
But, yeah, no, I mean, like, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Not mad at the shark, but I can totally see where people might be mad at the shark because it does seem like it's a little bit smarter than your average animal.
Well, which is okay. And listen, here's the other part, right? That kind of follows the formula. It's a company owned by a billionaire that's doing research, and we are going into a space that we shouldn't. And what happens when you go into a space that you shouldn't? You either create dinosaurs and they overtake an island, and then you bring them back to the United States and it doesn't go well.
And they're roaming Northern California.
Right. Or you take a submarine through some primordial cloud.
It was a hydrogen sulfide cloud.
It breaks the cloud, and then all of a sudden you're disturbing the peace. And then what happens is, and this is a spoiler alert, I'm going to spoil the Meg a little bit. When they launch back through the cloud, they create a little opening. And
okay,
who knows what else has come through there.
Right. So can we just talk for a second about the thermal tracking thing? It looked like when you watch when they showed the submarine coming up through and the heat signature, right, of it, if you will. It's like when they have those thermal security videos and they show people farting on the subway platform or in the airports. That's exactly what it looked like. And that was one moment where I laughed out loud because there's nothing funnier
than
that.
That's what it
looks like. Yeah, it's just
the shark coming out of a butthole. That's what's happening. So here's what happens. The Meg does not make it. Spoiler alert. Jason Statham stabs in the eye.
Which I thought my prediction of Statham not making it was going to almost come true.
I'm so shocked that the Meg was bested. But then, of course, there's this very ominous, great ending and perhaps one of the better uses of the word fiend, however you want to pronounce it. That was very clever. But what we know, because we're smart people, is that when the booty hole was open, the Meg was not the only prehistoric
beast. Yeah.
We saw a giant octopus down there.
It was a giant squid.
So what else? What do you think is coming up next? Because, of course, if this makes its money back, there will be a Meg 2 or...
Well, is there going to be, like, are the Jurassic universe and the Meg universe going to cross?
I don't think so.
And the Gallimasaurus or whatever, the aquatic... Is there going to be like an alien versus predator of the Meg versus that dinosaur?
No, there's just going to be a completely different spinoff in the Jurassic World universe where they incorporate a Megalodon. Because, I mean, they've already bred it. So there's just going to be complete like Meg spinoff in the Jurassic World universe.
I hope that doesn't happen. Just as someone.
We all hope that doesn't happen.
But we were talking about the rewatchability of this movie. This is almost a date movie. And here's why I say that. You break the one seat buffer with somebody you want to sit next to, obviously, in a date situation.
Right.
But there's there's jump scares in this movie. There's horrible dialogue that you can laugh at.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a movie that if you're, you know, 7-8 months from now and you see it's on Netflix or one of the other streaming services,
sure.
You'd be sitting on the couch next to somebody you like, and this is one that you put on because you don't have to think about it. No one's going to cry and be sad at the end of it. It's not going to remind somebody of an ex-boyfriend or a girlfriend.
Right.
Like, you can just go and it's a good, just relax, watch this movie and then laugh and, you know, jump a little bit. Mm-hmm. And, it's a good, you know, maybe sitting in your dorm room type movie.
I feel like they could have shaved 15 minutes just off of some of the scenes where there would be like dialogue. Okay.
And elevator ride.
How about those? There were all these like weird pauses.
How many times did they go?
Like, move it along. And again, that's being nitpicky on a movie that is enjoyable, but not something that is super compelling. That was just me sitting there thinking, like, man, they're kind of letting some of this stuff breathe a little bit, but it's going nowhere. Like, there's these ancillary moments where you're like, why couldn't you just cut that quicker?
Right.
Right? Like the whole Rainn Wilson arriving thing, there's a bit with he arrives at this
it looks like an oil derrick, like a
giant
deep water horizon,
200 miles off the Sea of Shanghai, I believe.
Yep.
And then he gets in this elevator and he makes a quip about like, oh, I thought, you know, for $3 billion, the elevator would look better, opens to this like incredible state-of-the-art facility. And then when Statham's character arrives, I was waiting for him to say the same thing.
Which, and there's a lot of homages I felt to other movies in this. Well, it was Jaws, the score, you know, definitely pays homage to John Williams and the Jaws soundtrack. And it wasn't with instrumentation, it was with rhythmic, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely.
And then there was some 2001, A Space Odyssey, kind of like that's what the whole underwater thing kind of looked like, the spaceship and that.
I mean, for people that don't like water or have a fear of drowning, and if you're afraid of sharks and if you've been to the ocean, like it plays on a lot of those fears that you'll have. I mean, I don't know if you have that kind of fear. Like, I can't say that this is something that you should see because there are so many moments where
they're
get
in the
you
water,
with those jump
the whole
scares.
Movie, yeah.
Right. They're in the water the whole movie and there's a lot of close calls, everybody. I was just waiting for Meg Ryan to show up.
What?
It's called the Meg.
Okay. You got
man. That went over my head.
That one went over my head too. So.
Wow. Hey, listen. I guarantee you people that listen to the One Seat Buffer podcast would have been thinking the whole time, is this the best Meg out there? And the answer is, it's close.
Okay,
I mean, Meg Ryan's right there.
So
Meg Griffin's right there as well. Find a better Meg. That's all I'm saying.
Did you say Meg Griffin? Is that what you said? Right. I was just going to ask. You,
right.
We could do the...
Find a
better Mary sleep with kill game with Meg Ryan, the Megalodon, and Meg Griffin.
Well, Meg Griffin's underage, so I'm not going to comment on that. I'm taking the Megalodon. I'm going to take one for the team. But find me a better Meg than the Megalodon. You can't. What's Meg Ryan been doing?
You don't are we know. Talking like Meg Ryan like now or Meg Ryan
we're
like Top
who,
Gun Meg Ryan?
Who's in the theaters now?
That's
I'll
fair.
Have what the Megalodon's having. That's what I'm saying. Right?
Good.
Which are, was are a you, lot of people because the Megalodon was hungry.
It just eats like a,
it
a
does.
Fish.
There's a great sequence coming back to the cinematography to where the Megalodon is heading towards this highly populated beach.
Which that beach looked beautiful, by
it
the way.
It did. There were so many people in the water, and you're just thinking, is this thing just going to open its mouth and act like me at a buffet? And it got to pick off a couple people. And that's what I thought was good. Like, they didn't go over the line. Because this is PG-13.
Right.
Keep that in mind. This is PG-13. So, yes, there's some blood and tense and moments that I wouldn't bring my kids to. But they're apparently, you know, kids younger than mine here. Whatever. I wouldn't bring my kids to a movie called The Meg, even if it is PG-13. But they were very – I felt very conscious about not getting that R rating because, Travis, as you know, you get that R rating sometimes and you lose out on a whole different audience. I mean, think about how many kids
– This is a movie that a teenager is going to dig big time. This
yes.
is a really
and
good
Travis,
movie for
you've
that
you've probably
age.
Seen that since it opened, right? It's been skewing a bunch of demos but probably a little bit younger.
Yeah, no, it's been doing pretty good so far across all the demographics. I have to say, it's August. Movies never do well in August.
Sure.
And this is probably the best movie in August I have ever seen, ever. Like, it's just breaking all records as far as I'm concerned from what I've seen like at this particular theater for an August movie. So, yeah, no. But the demographic that surprises me the most – the older demographic is coming in to watch this movie like crazy.
So I had dinner with my dad tonight. My mom and dad came over to our house for a little Sunday supper, and we were talking about this. He almost came with us tonight. Oh, it just was a little too late for his oldness. But I hope he I know he listens when he's going. But just he was telling me like one of his favorite movie experiences that he likes to talk about is when he was in medical school and he was exhausted and he just worked a 24-hour shift, but one of his buddies was like, let's go see Jaws. So my mom, my dad, one of my dad's friends, and his wife, they went to see Jaws. The two guys hadn't slept in 24 hours. And so they're sleep deprived and they're going to see Jaws. So there's like this – he has this very specific memory of seeing that movie. And because of that, there's this odd affinity now for shark movies because of that. It just was a fun time in his life that he remembers seeing that movie.
Could you imagine being so sleep-deprived and then watching that movie? Like, no. Jaws is like one of those movies that just kind of scares you.
And I like that this movie didn't even try at all in the slightest to be – Jaws.
Yeah, and it wasn't trying to be scary, really. I mean, they had the like jump scares and everything, but it wasn't scary. It was just exciting and fun.
That's a really good point.
I like that. It yeah. was yeah, no. So
well, and keep recommend. In mind they by keeping that PG-13 rating, they're aware, right? So that's where the levity comes in and the attempted comedy with the dialogue, which is hit or miss, and then there is that little bit of a romance subplot, but then also Jason Statham's character's ex-wife is involved.
Yeah, that
was rescued her. Sort of a throwaway, right. But it humanizes him a little bit, I guess. But yeah, you know what's so interesting is in the final act, when Jason Statham has bested the Meg, all of a sudden he's being swarmed by normal size sharks that are coming
right, because,
to prey.
Well, yeah,
because
the
they
Meg. Talked about that all along.
Right.
They're like, these sharks, they're
tiny little 8-foot.
Right,
sharks.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, at that moment, I'm like, oh, look at those cute sharks. Whereas in reality, I never want to see one that close to me.
And also,
I don't even want to jump in the dirty ass Mississippi River because I don't want a catfish to hit my foot. You've seen catfish weigh 100 pounds come out of that thing. You know what I'm saying? But, like, in that moment, you think, okay, well, they've bested the 75-foot prehistoric megalodon. Here come some harmless hammerheads whizzing by JS.
Which I found out during Shark Week, hammerheads are actually one of the most violent sharks out there. Like, they attack more humans than great whites do.
I'd be mad, too, if I looked like that. Those things are disgusting.
And, like, I'm glad that – I mean, I obviously – my cousin Angie is she's a marine biologist veterinarian. She used to work at the Atlanta Aquarium. Mm-hmm. But I'm glad that I wasn't with her because she'd be like, tiger sharks and hammerheads don't live in the same water. Like, they would climate off of Southeast Asia is not that would not ever be where those types of sharks live.
It seems like the majority of this was filmed in maybe New Zealand from what I read. So, and that's the other thing. Like, are people going to nitpick that? I think the set pieces looked really good. But it's all on Statham. Like Jason Statham is still a viable star who made a splash. When he was in Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, 1998. Yeah, thank you for the rim shot on the splash. That's another one right there. I got it, everybody.
It's too late.
Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, Jason Statham shows up as Bacon. One of my favorite movies for sure, a Guy Ritchie directed. He has really just become this action star, and we've seen him in so many different movies over the years, and I like the guy. I mean, I was a big fan of the Crank movies. I thought those were super fun, and then he gets involved in Fast and the Furious.
Well, he's in the Italian Job, which is an underrated movie.
Good.
And the thing is this is going to be weird how I'm saying this, but the dude just smiles, and it's like, I like this guy. Like, he's charming. He is 100% charming. He's never going to make the like a King's Speech type movie. Like, no, he's not going to do anything like that. Not. I mean, he understands that he's at his best when he is, you know, swimming in a swimming pool, suffocating a guy as a hitman, or, you know, like he did in The Mechanic, or doing a movie like this, or he's driving. He has to be driving something fast because that's what he does.
Whether it's a sub. How about this?
Those submarines were awesome in this movie, by the way.
Statham's impact on the British and American film industries is the subject of an academic study by Leeds Beckett University that's wrapping up at the end of this year. The man has the touch, and that's what's so crazy, because he was like a trained fighter, and he just has that look. He just looks – you just can – I mean, I guess you can believe that he can stab a megalodon in the eye and make it okay, but that's what – like, he gets put in all these positions, and you're like, well, that's Jason Statham. Like, I think this guy has a chance. You know, he's always putting himself at risk in this movie, whether he's jumping in after, you know, his – love interest, or just saving another ancillary character, but he's there and he's all in. And I think that's what's probably so great to work with a guy like that. For people that are like his co-stars and directors and producers, they're just like, he's gonna show up every day and be ready. Like, he's gonna know his lines, which are not hard, and he's gonna look jacked. And he's just going to be there. And I think you can bank on that.
Yeah. And
just like you can bank on The Rock. Now, The Rock is maybe a little bit more multifaceted with some of his business, you know, ventures. But who's to say that Statham? I mean, that.
But that's why those two are electric in the Fast and Furious movies. Like, that's why those two are a great duo in that, because they're similar set pieces. It's like having two great NBA players. It's like Steph Curry and Kevin Durant on the same
roster. Yeah, they're very much at the top of their game. I'm just happy to see Statham back. And I mean, I know that he wasn't like gone or
he had to take a couple years off so he qualified for Social Security. I can't believe he's 51 years old.
Listen, we saw him in The Fate of the Furious. He was in Mechanic Resurrection. He was in Spy, Furious 7, Wild Card, Expendables 3. So he's been staying busy, but it's just nice to see him like at the top of the slate, right? Like, that he's the guy, whether you came to see the Meg, the shark.
I think most people came to see Statham.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of the two for sure. But then the other side of this whole thing this is the point that I'm not trying to like lament on, but there's also this other audience that's showing up to see these Chinese actresses and actors. And that's really exciting as well.
So like, is it Bi Bing, is that what was her name?
Li Bingbing. I'm not saying this. Here you go. I got some stats on her. All
perverted.
Right,
so, she's beautiful. Like, she's a beautiful woman.
She's great. And she's been in a whole bunch of stuff herself. A lot of Chinese movies. So that's where this audience is going to know her from, things like The Knot, Linger, Forbidden Kingdom. She's been acting and acting and acting. She was in Transformers Age of Extinction.
That's where I've seen her.
She was in Resident Evil Retribution. So she's got some crossover work, but for sure. And that's where, again, Warner Brothers, who distributed this, yes, it makes sense to have this be a movie that can do well internationally, because there's no way it's going to make $400 million
right
just in the States. No way. Not even if you released it the day Shark Week started, you know. Even if you gave I think it was popcorn. I mean, it's one of those things where it's
Swedish
like
Swedish fish.
Yes, Swedish fish would be good. Do you have Swedish fish here at the Palmstead Movie Theater?
No, we don't, unfortunately.
What? Oh my goodness!
It was the official candy of Shark Week. I can't take credit for making that.
But listen, this is what I'm saying. Like, these movie studios understand the power of the foreign market, and films are being green lit because they know damn well that they'll perform overseas. And Skyscraper is a great example, and so is The Meg.
I was really hoping in that opening shot as you came up out of the water beautifully, and it was the skyline of Shanghai, I was actually hoping it would be Hong Kong and the skyscraper from Skyscraper would be standing. Like,
it would be really
like,
easy to blend those two together, yeah. Those two movies, right? You could see.
It would have been a really fun thing if they
I just
to.
Wonder, okay, so one of the last things I want to just kind of
talk really
about.
There's really not much more we can talk
no,
about
No, but
this
I
movie.
Just I want to just sort of think about, like, other prehistoric or beasts that we have thought have been, you know, extinct. What else would have come through?
Smallfoot
could have definitely.
I could just see the poster
through.
For Smallfoot.
But you have to imagine, because we are certainly gearing up for a Godzilla versus the Moth thing versus King Kong.
It's a Clash of the Titans.
So something else had to have come up, right? So in 2 years or a year and a half, probably 2 years from now, there will be another one of these Meg type movies.
What are those those like long neck like dinosaur things, like the Mosasaurus, I think, or whatever?
Maybe,
like the,
I don't.
The like the theoretical Loch Ness monster.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, like, I mean, maybe that's what else came up.
What's this theoretical mumbo jumbo?
Well, I mean,
Nessie is real.
Nessie may be real.
So is Champ and Lake Champlain in Vermont.
But they think that it might be a Mosasaurus. I mean, they don't actually know what Nessie is.
Sure,
it might be a Mosasaurus. Theoretically,
we don't even know how deep Loch Ness is now.
Yeah, maybe
we learned that from this movie.
Maybe it's the deepest place on Earth. I mean, not the Mariana Trench.
So I really did also realize I didn't read the Smallfoot that LeBron James is the voice of Smallfoot.
Yeah, that doesn't look bad. I think it's Channing Tatum.
Oh
yeah,
it's
right.
Okay, so LeBron James is Wong.
Yeah, LeBron James is not Smallfoot. LeBron James is a Bigfoot. Not a Smallfoot.
Oh, that's right. Yes, thank you for clarifying. So the Yetis are the star, and Smallfoot would be
got it
us yeah. People. So coming back to the Meg, just sequel. So the director, whose name is John, I think it's John
Turtle.
it's Turtle Taub. It's got to be. Here's what he said. He's referencing the current state. Like, where would we find Jonas Taylor, who is Statham's character? He's on vacation. If there's another one of these, everyone's high-fiving. We never make a movie thinking there will be another one. That's a load of BS. It's bad luck, and you just can't believe you're ever going to finish the first one. But where would you go? Hopefully not the route other bad sequels go, and just start making things bigger. It's Uber Meg and Mega Megs and all that. Oh my gosh.
Okay, so that is the movie director version of what Kevin Costner tells Nuke LaLoosh to do in Bull Durham, where he's like, you know, just one step at a time, just
right.
Blessed to be here. Like, that's we never think about a sequel.
Never,
it's just it's bad luck if you do that. Like, that's the AAA prospect answer for.
Listen, meet.
Are we
making, the
yeah, which can we all? We need to talk about sports movies someday, and that to me is one of.
Yeah,
the best.
Hey, listen, you put out a sports movie that's as fun as The Meg, and I'll be there, everybody. I think that what's going to happen
exists. It's called Necessary Roughness.
If this movie eclipses that $400 million mark, even if it's 401,
it only breaks even at that point.
Absolutely, be like, all right, Turtle Tab, Turtle Power, whatever your name is, get back to work. This is Hollywood. Like, this is what happens, you know, if it's successful, and I hope that it is. And again, like, this is there will be no popular Academy Award for The Meg, that
right.
New category they just introduced. This will be a movie that you either see and laugh at and have fun and tell your friends the same, or you've got Netflix or whatever streaming service it lands on, and you see it and you think, well, yeah, why not? That's where you're going to find it.
You're going to find it
in one of those two avenues. And I could see myself watching it at home.
This
as much as it wouldn't have the same effect,
right.
I could do it.
This isn't a movie where at the end of it I was like, I just wasted an hour and 40 minutes of my life. Like, at no point did I feel that. Mm-hmm. There have been movies that we've seen in recent history that I have felt that. And it's, I'm glad that it wasn't. I was also glad that we made it in for the trailers. The Creed 2 trailer, I hadn't seen it yet. And
fun.
Like, I was ready to go. I was ready to go get in a fight.
Yeah, that looks fun. We saw Creed 2, Predator, the Clock in the Walls or whatever it's called, the Jack Black movie. The House with the Clock
in the Walls. I'm actually intrigued by that a little bit.
I don't know. I feel like it's playing on that Fantastic Beasts. I know it's not the same thing, and I'm sure it's based on a book, and I apologize if it's your favorite book and you're listening to the One Seat Buffer podcast. I just I don't know. And I will say that I've come around. I mean, not that I ever disliked Jack Black, but I was – the person that said that Jumanji looked terrible, didn't see it in the theaters, watched it at home, and I thought it was palatable. You know,
see, I wouldn't watch it again. Nacho Libre Jack Black is awful.
Sorry. Here's a hot take. Here's a Tony Tone hot take. I cannot stand movies like Tropic Thunder. And I feel the same way about Jumanji as I do Tropic Thunder. Like, it's a head scratcher. Like, when people were so excited about Tropic Thunder, I thought, did I not see the right movie? Because I don't think it was that good. And people think that that's like one of the funniest movies.
No, it's not.
I've watched it multiple times. I'm not saying Jumanji has sort of this lore, and I do think that Tropic Thunder still gets, you know, talked about. But certainly Jumanji made $1 billion, so I'm clearly in the minority here. And I'm not saying that I hated it. I didn't get it.
I enjoyed it, but I didn't love it. I think the thing is you're seeing these movies that we kind of are looking at, movies like The House with the Clock in the Wall. It's got to try and compete with the Harry Potter universe and this, you know, weird like ballet movie, like the Nutcracker that's coming out too. Like, I'm intrigued by that too. I mean, these movies have to have this sort of weird feel to it. There's another like dystopian type movie that's coming out.
Yeah,
too,
I remember that one.
That we saw in the trailer for Skyscraper. Oh, Darkest Minds, was it? That's
the Darkest Minds. Oh, is that's it out? Okay. Wow.
I mean, that one's out already. It hasn't been doing the greatest as far as the box office goes. But the people who have been watching that one, they've been saying some pretty good things about it.
Can you try and pull some strings and see if we can get Eighth Grade here in Muscatine, the Bo Burnham written and directed movie? Have you heard of this movie?
I have not heard of this movie.
I mean, it's getting all sorts of critical acclaim. So it's a rated R movie, like rated R comedy kind of, but it's about the horrors of and kind of genuineness of middle school. It follows an eighth grade girl. Bo Burnham, the comedian, wrote it and directed it. And it's he basically kind of wanted to tell a story about, you know, middle school and how rough it can be.
Get some people to like ask for it here, and then the more people I have ask for it, the more likely it'll be.
And this was the weekend that it started its national release, and so I think those are the kind of movies that people are going to start getting in the mood to see.
Mr. Fridley, give us Eighth Grade, please. What else? Who else do we need to ask for? Mr. Fridley, please give us that movie. We just saw a shark bigger than this almost entire theater. So give us
some substance.
Give us a little bit of Eighth Grade. And I can't believe that, you know, Bo Burnham is directing, because I got to interview Bo years and years ago when he was putting videos on YouTube and break.com. And he is incredibly talented. And Eighth Grade does look very good. It does. It looks super compelling. The main character like posts a series of videos on YouTube and uses it as like a therapeutic outlet. And it looks very good. It total opposite of the Meg.
Right. Yeah.
Exact opposite. But it's not to say that there's not time for both. Right. And absolutely. I think that's what the moral of the story is with the Meg. Like, there is, you know, enough pieces of the pie, pieces of the people that the Meg eats to go around.
Enough rows of teeth.
Yeah, because when was the last time we saw a shark movie? Think about it.
In the theater, it was like 47 meters down.
Open water. Like open water.
Yeah. I was going to say, last year about this time, there was 47 meters down. So
The Shallows was the year before that.
The Shallows,
so
yep.
Like basically, every August at the tail end of beach season, they scare you out of tourism and tell you about sharks.
Exactly.
But I, and it's not to take anything away, because I remember Open Water, and that was probably a couple years ago, but The Shallows, the pretty good. More on the dramatic side, for sure.
Well, yeah, I think you have to make it more realistic with it. Because,
you have to be grounded in reality. I mean, the reality is there are giant things swimming around in rivers, streams, lakes, and oceans.
And there are accounts, whether they're validated or not. There's that famous photo of what shark-like fins, a tail fin and a dorsal fin, next to a German U-boat in World War II. Like, someone got a picture of it from a destroyer because they thought they saw this thing in the water.
Wow.
And then there's also been some underwater surveillance cameras that the Discovery Channel people have had, where they've had, like, large shark-like things swim by that they're trying to measure off of. So there is a legitimate hypothesis that the largest great white shark of 28 feet or whatever they've ever discovered may not be the largest shark that's in the ocean.
It's got to be. I mean, you can't be the person that says we're alone in the universe. This is it. We're the only intelligent life. No, wrong. There's other life out there for sure. And just like in our waters, oceans, whatever, there's stuff down there. I mean, if you could pull 100-plus-pound catfish out of the Mississippi River, and I say that because the One Seat Buffer podcast originates along basically the Mississippi River. Yes, I don't even want to think about what's down deep in the depths of the ocean, just chilling, waiting to be discovered. And we almost have that. I mean, we pretty much have that technology. Think about how they found the Titanic with these little subs that are able to go to great depths and explore. So I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm not going to be there, you know what I mean? I'm not volunteering as tribute to go cover it.
Hunger Games underwater.
No, I'll look at the pictures or the videos and stay out of the ocean. That's what I'm doing.
But I think there's not much more we can say about this.
Here's what we can say. Jason Statham is a BA, and you should go see the Meg and enjoy it, because odds are your coworkers or your friends are like,
this is a good water cooler movie.
Oh, yeah. Right. A lot of conversation will be had about this. And then I got to see the preview for The Predator. I had not really seen a full preview. And I don't know. I still really don't want to see it. I don't. But if it comes out in a week where, like, The Nun isn't out already, or The Old Man and The Gun isn't out, and
Venom is the other
and
one.
Joel wants to see it, and Travis, do you want to see The Predator?
Not really. Right. I haven't seen any of the other ones. Don't shoot me, but I haven't seen any of the other ones, so I don't.
I'm not, you know, and we're getting into my busier time of year with high school football and some of the responsibilities I have with that.
Yeah.
If I have to make a choice between, that might be a weekend that I'm like, you know what, let's not do this.
Maybe we'll be wrong. Maybe it'll be better than it looks. Just like The Meg, because as I said before, I did not really want to see The Meg. I wasn't excited about seeing The Meg. And then it started, and I was all in.
Like, I felt bad. I was laughing at this movie at some points. Like, I looked over at you a couple times, Tony. I was like, are you kidding me? Like, that's really what
this is happening right now. But I think that they're okay with that. I think they're very self-aware of what this is. Yeah. I mean, how many Sharknado movies have been made?
Five.
And how many have been enjoyed? They're fantastic. They're fantastic. God,
I was
kind
of waiting for, like, a cameo from,
like, Tara Reid.
But
Ian Ziering.
Right.
I mean, listen, the Sharknado movies have been a phenomenon.
I'm just glad no fish were cut with chainsaws in this movie.
Yeah, listen, they're very self-conscious of that. I mean, there's some stuff blown up, some whale babies being eaten, but otherwise it's all CGI. So PETA can't get mad.
Eaton.
But, yeah.
Is that a name of, like, a band name?
Eaton.
Oh, Eaton Whale Babies.
It could be.
That's the first record from Bubbles in Your Bloodstream.
We talk about the One Seat Buffer, meaning when we, for the most part, when we go and see a movie, as long as it's not Beauty and the Beast crowded, which is my way to judge how crowded things are here at the Palms. If you're able to keep a seat buffer between you and a friend, sometimes you and your significant other, if you just want to have your space to have your own popcorn or your own concessions, whatever. So what we come to at the end of these podcasts are, the question is, would you break the one seat buffer? Would you see a movie like The Meg with a stranger next to you because you want to see it that bad? Travis, I'm going to start with you.
Absolutely not. Because this is such a conversation movie, I would just sooner watch it in a theater where I was literally the only person there, so I did not have to hear people talking through the entire movie. Half of the people in the theater were talking through the movie.
Yeah, it doesn't do a good job of holding your attention. There's no way. There's no way I'm breaking this buffer unless it's my wife.
They were talking about the movie. I understood why they were talking. They were talking at like times where like it was a kind not really appropriate to talk. It's never appropriate to talk in the theater, but I understand why they were talking, but they were still talking through the entire movie. I just can't put up with that. I hate that.
I don't know what you could be saying, like, besides the moments like Joel had mentioned where we were like, oh my gosh, like that's acceptable. I think if you're laughing and you're like, this is just ridiculous, but you can't sit there and dissect like, well, I don't know if that scuba gear is accurate. That sub technology hasn't really evolved to the point where they can attach missiles to it. Like, did they just shoot a giant?
They were duct taping missiles to submarines.
They were duct taping stuff. This movie had a lot of duct tape.
Just like the skyscraper.
You don't need to talk about this. And yeah, and turn your phone off. Somebody's phone rang. Like, what year are we in? Put the phone. I'm going to be an old man soon. I promise you, I will never. And I don't think I've ever had my phone ring in my life at a movie theater. And I've seen a ton of movies. I'm not that guy. I'm never going to be that guy. And I'm also not going to be the guy that breaks the one seat buffer on The Meg. And it's unfortunate because I did like it more than Jurassic Park, Fallen Kingdom, but I don't want to sit next to a stranger. I need both armrests to enjoy a movie like The Meg thoroughly. And here's what you're going to do. You're going to go see it at your local theater. If you're in the Muscatine, Quad City, Iowa City area, come to the Palms 10 Movie Theater. See it on the XL screen, one of the biggest in the entire state, along with the Dolby Atmos sound, like we mentioned at the beginning. That's the way to experience it. And I think Fridley is even opening a theater that has a bigger screen than the XL. Is that true?
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, and I mean, like, I could have missed something here, but right now we are the largest screen in the Iowa, in the entire state.
Good.
And there's going to be two screens opening up here in, I believe, November that are going to beat us. And they're both in our company still. There's going to be an IMAX that's going to be 73 feet, I believe. Gosh. And don't quote me on this. And then there's going to be another XL that's going to be 63 feet, which is going to outrank us by 10 feet.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, so
but they don't have a podcast.
That's right. They might have a party room, but no podcast in it. So a 53-foot screen will do justice to a 75-foot megalodon. Jason Statham is man versus shark, and this time, man is victorious.